Okay, we are ready to go. And if we're lucky, we'll have time for y'all to report back on your collaborations. Thank you, Michael, for that kind introduction. Thanks to Jose for the invitation. And thanks to you all for being here today. It's truly my pleasure to have the opportunity to talk this morning about the National HIV/AIDS Strategy for the United States. And since this is in the track on data for action, I did want to focus my remarks on reaching our ambitious targets. So I'm going to start by talking a little bit about our National HIV/AIDS Strategy. As many of you know, this, the first comprehensive strategy for the United States was released by President Obama in 2010, and that was updated last year in 2015. And actually, the strategy is not just one strategy, but it's really a family of five documents. And I'll be talking about those as I go through my remarks this morning. But wanted to start off by talking about the strategy, which we have available both in English and a Spanish language version. And the reason for updating the strategy in 2015 was really multifaceted, but here are a few key reasons for the update, and I'll go through this kind of clockwise on the slide. So the Affordable Care Act has truly transformed healthcare access in our country, providing more opportunities for healthcare coverage for a number of people, providing more benefits, and ideally reducing costs and improving healthcare quality. We've also focused since 2010 on improving the HIV care continuum. It's been a priority. It's really been a guiding framework for us all in talking about HIV care and treatment and improving those health outcomes. In addition, since 2010, HIV testing and HIV treatment have had new recommendations. There were the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommendation on routine HIV testing. There's also been new guidelines for laboratory diagnosis of HIV infection so that infections can be identified earlier. And we've also had updated treatment guidelines recommending treatment without depending on CD4 counts. Our prevention toolkit has expanded. We had the HPTN052 results showing treatment works as prevention, and also a number of efficacy studies showing the effectiveness of pre-exposure prophylaxis or PrEP. And throughout this time and continuing, research has been unlocking new knowledge and tools. And we've not only had our research around prevention, around the continuum of care, but also continuing research on vaccines and on a cure. So when the strategy was released last year, the president signed an executive order indicating how to implement the updated strategy. And that involved, as I've mentioned, updating from 2010 and incorporating in the recommendations from a work group that was convened to address issues related to the intersection of HIV/AIDS and violence against women and gender-related health disparities. That report and progress came out in 2012 and onwards. And then in 2013, we had the HIV Care Continuum Initiative, which really galvanized federal and other actions around the continuum of care. And these three documents were brought together in the updated strategy. And so the activities around HIV and violence against women are now in the updated strategy and continue forward through 2020. And the activities in the HIV Care Continuum Initiative have been wrapped into the strategy and continue through 2020. Now, the four goals of the strategy have remained the same. And these include reducing new HIV infections, improving access to care and health outcomes for people living with HIV, reducing HIV-related health disparities, and achieving a more coordinated national response. And in addition to these goals, as we were discussing and going around the country having community forums about the updated strategy, really four key areas came to the fore as a critical focus for us through 2020. And at ONAP, we fondly refer to these as the Big Four. And these include widespread HIV testing and linkage to care, enabling people living with HIV to access treatment earlier, full access to PrEP for those for whom it is appropriate and desired, with support for medication adherence for those who are using PrEP, broad support for people living with HIV to remain in comprehensive care, and adherent support for their treatment, as well as universal viral suppression for people living with HIV. So these are really four areas that kind of go across our goals and really cut through to the heart of the strategy and for our activities through 2020. In addition to updating the strategy, it was also time to update our indicators and their targets. So many of the indicators from the 2010 strategy had targets through 2015. So it was an opportunity to reconsider where we were with our indicators and those targets. And with the strategy, with the update last summer, we also released an indicator supplement that defines the indicators that we developed. It includes an overview of the indicators, how the numerators defined, how the denominators define, the annual targets, everything a data person would love. As we went through our process of developing the indicators, we started off, before we did anything, we started off identifying some criteria to guide us in identifying indicators. And so these criteria included for the indicators themselves that they should be directly relevant to the goals of the strategy, that they reflected these advances in science, policy, and practice, and that they focused on measurable outcomes and that we weren't just measuring processes but really driving towards those health outcomes. The measures themselves needed to have face validity. Were they measuring what they were supposed to be measuring? And that ideally they would be simple and accessible to a wide variety of audiences so that people could grasp what we were measuring with each indicator. For the data sources, ideally they would be nationally representative, that the data would come out on a timely basis and a routine basis, that the data would be comparable across years, that we could stratify the data so that we could look at disparity measures and monitor those. And also, in an ideal way, when we could choose a data source, that would also permit states to be able to monitor their progress on the same indicators. And so our objectives overall for the indicators were to align, again, with data science and practice, to set some bold targets for us to achieve by 2020, to improve the way we monitor disparities, and really to inspire action. And as we were developing the indicators, it's always important to kind of take stock of where you are and what the contours of the burden of HIV is. So in the United States, our current estimate is 1.2 million people living with HIV. And each year we see over 40,000 new diagnoses. And these are data from 2014, which is our most recent data available right now, looking at transmission categories. So you can see in the yellow part of this pie that nearly two-thirds of new diagnoses are attributable to male-to-male sexual contact or among men who have sex with men, 25% attributed to heterosexual contact, and 6% to injection drug use. When we look at diagnoses by age, I would call your attention to the yellow and the pink slices on this pie. These are the younger age groups, 22% of new diagnoses among people 13 to 24, and another 32% among those 25 to 34 years. When we look geographically at HIV in the United States, we can see the rate of diagnoses here, with the higher rates concentrating in the South and in the Northeast. And these are data by state, but it's also important that we think and we look at our data at the smaller level, that we go down to the level of cities. And what we do know for HIV in the United States is that since the 1980s, this has truly been an urban phenomenon, with over 80% of all AIDS diagnoses occurring in large urban areas. You can see also from this slide that HIV is in every state. So it has permeated into smaller cities and rural areas, but it does remain predominantly an urban phenomenon. And that's why it makes for a nice collaboration with the U.S. And the Fast Track Cities Initiative, focusing on HIV prevention and care activities concentrated in cities. And this, finally, looking at racial and ethnic disparities in the United States, the pie on the left is diagnoses of HIV infection. The one on the right is the U.S. population. And I would draw your attention to the pink slices in each slide. These are Black and African Americans, who comprise 44% of all HIV diagnoses, yet only 12% of the population, and similar disparities seen for Hispanics and Latinos, 23% of all diagnoses and 17% of the population. So these are the 10 indicators that we developed for the updated strategy. And I'll go through these just to give you a little sense of what's behind each of them. So the first one is increasing the percentage of people living with HIV who know their status to 90%. So we also adopted for the United States the 90-90-90 goals. So this is the first 90. Reducing the number of new diagnoses by at least 25%. We have seen some declines over time and want to be sure that we are continuing on a trajectory and that we can achieve a 25% decline there. Reducing the percentage of young gay and bisexual men who've engaged in risk behaviors by 10%. This really is an ambitious goal when we think about the trajectory of increases in HIV in this group. So really focusing on reducing risk behaviors will help us turn around some of those trends. Increasing the percentage of people who are linked to care within 1 month of diagnosis. This indicator has changed. We used to want to link people within 3 months, but with the new information and the need to link people to care and start treatment early to gain the most benefits, we reduced that period to 1 month. And then our next two 90s are increasing the percentage of people who are retained in care to 90% and increasing the percentage with viral suppression to 80%. That's actually 90% of the 90% who are retained in care. And then reducing the percentage of people with HIV who are homeless to no more than 5%. This 5% represents reducing that number in half by 2020. So it's really getting at sort of that last group who are likely to be the hardest to reach and to provide these types of services. And we also have an indicator to reduce the death rate among people living with HIV by a third. And sometimes we need to remind ourselves that in the face of all our great progress and our improved health outcomes, we do still have people dying from HIV in this country and need to focus on reducing that outcome as well. And we have two disparity measures. One is reducing the disparity in diagnoses among gay and bisexual men, and specifically among young Black gay and bisexual men, among Black women, and among people living in the Southern United States. And our second disparity indicator is around viral suppression. So we identified two groups that had the lowest prevalence of viral suppression, youth and people who inject drugs. And by setting their targets at the 80%, which is the same as the overall, we're essentially seeking to eliminate that disparity. So this is just an overview of where we are with the indicators. The baseline data are from 2010. The actuals would be each year's data, and these mostly reflect 2012 at this point, and then our 2020 targets. And the progress, you can see that we have a number of green indicators, meaning that we met our annual targets. The yellow one for retention means that we're moving in the right direction, but did not actually meet the target for that year. And the red ones are those where we need to put that effort to have a turnaround and make it go in the right direction. And we're pleased to see that we are making progress towards these goals, but I also put this out with a note of caution that we have set our annual targets at an accelerated pace because when we implemented the strategy in 2010, there were a number of major changes that were getting underway, and so with that ramp up in those activities and then ongoing activities, we really think that we'll be seeing a lot more of the change in later years, which means that these annual targets are going to be increasingly difficult to achieve. With our indicators, we also identified three that needed more work on development, so we called them developmental indicators. These were ones that we really wanted to have reflected, but they needed more work, so we needed to be able to identify data sources and analytic methods and wanted to engage in both technical and community consultations. So these three are PrEP uptake, HIV stigma, and HIV among transgender persons. And we're currently running three different work groups working on each of these indicators and expect to have those in our 2016 progress report at the end of this year. So we have our goals, we have our indicators, and now the conversation turns to, well, how do we achieve those targets? And sometimes when we get focused on our discussions around data, we think, okay, we have our indicators and our targets. Now we have to align everything to achieve those indicator targets. But that's a little bit of the tail wagging the dog. I mean, we need to think about what are the most effective and the most important actions. We need to have indicators that will monitor our progress. And it's really much more of a balanced viewpoint on putting those two things together. I always consider it a success when I can put a dog slide in. So now I want to turn and talk a little bit about how we are going to achieve those targets. And this involves activities that are documented in our federal action plan, which describes actions for the 10 departments and agencies within those departments that comprise our federal interagency work group. And these are actions that are documented for 2016 through 2020. And then new under our updated strategy, we've produced a community action plan framework. And this is a companion piece for communities, for state health departments, for community-based organizations, advocacy groups, healthcare delivery systems, communities, to go through a process to align their actions and their priorities with the strategy. And so I just wanted to show you a little bit about what this document looks like and how it's arranged. So going from the top left here, we have recommended steps in working through this framework. We have example actions for stakeholders so that it can sort of start the juices flowing and some ideas for actions that different types of stakeholder groups might take. We have focus questions to guide those discussions. And then a framework in thinking about the actions. It's not just what action are you going to take, but what are the communications needed around that? What are the resources needed? What leadership is needed to implement these actions? and what partners can help with the implementation and what data are needed to monitor and to report out from those actions. And then in the back of the document, we provide a sample template if people want to use that to document their actions. So it's meant to be a useful guide to help this process of aligning work really across the nation with the strategy. So let me go back and talk about how we're going to achieve those targets. So it should be no surprise that I come back to our big four with our major overall indicators. Many of those are reflected here. They're reflected in the goals of the strategy, testing and linkage to care, PrEP, retention, adherence, and universal viral suppression. So these are actions to take to help achieve those targets. We also have specific actions in our federal action plan. I give some examples here where we're supporting the care continuum. So we have a number of agencies that are disseminating lessons learned about extending healthcare coverage enrollment. I think that's a critical first step in accessing many of these services, is to have some type of coverage. CDC is committed to scaling up their data to care activities, which focus on linkage and re-engagement in care. NIH is supporting studies that measure medication adherence. They're also testing out long-acting antiretroviral formulations to also help improve with adherence. And CMS is providing information to state Medicaid directors on the latest treatment guidelines and prevention strategies, and putting this in the context of the program flexibility they have in their state Medicaid programs to support these activities. Another part of achieving our targets is not just focusing on the specific activities around the specific outcomes, but taking this broad view of where are we putting our resources. And in the strategy, we talk about aligning our resources with the burden of HIV. And this is an example from CDC's prevention funding. In the left, showing the map of where the distribution of people living with HIV are by state. And on the right, showing where the prevention funding will get to by 2016. So this is now fully implemented. And so really showing how we need to align the funding with the epidemic. And if you had a similar map for HRSA's formula funding, it would be the same thing. They take the cases and they're aligning the resources. And again, I would go back to the message about, you know, showing a map of the states, but thinking also within the states, and that states should also be considering how they're distributing their funding and resources within their state according to their geography and risk profile. So with our third goal focusing on disparities, we have a number of steps that are specified in the strategy, reducing disparities in communities at risk, and this involves providing services and targeting those services, and adopting structural approaches. And so this means including in our services basic services such as housing, employment, paying attention to food and nutrition needs, and then also reducing stigma and eliminating discrimination. And again, some examples of how we're addressing these issues. In our federal action plan, we have NIH committing to support research in the southern United States. And this is not only to improve our understanding of HIV and the drivers in the South, but also to help inform future funding opportunities. And SAMHSA is providing guidance to their grantees. So their grantees are largely organizations providing substance abuse and mental health services, but they're also offering HIV testing and integrated services as well. And so they're providing resources to their grantees on how to focus these testing initiatives. And within our community action plan framework, one of our focus questions is about how can you focus your organization's resources and activities for the groups that are have the highest burden. And some of the examples of actions are marketing testing services to those populations at highest risk and taking those steps to allocate resources accordingly. Some of the actions around pre-exposure prophylaxis, in our federal action plan, CDC has committed to increasing screening for STDs among gay and bisexual men, and they're focusing these activities in STD clinics and linking that to access to PrEP and PEP services so that there's a much more streamlined and efficient route and identification of people at substantial risk who could benefit from PrEP. HRSA and SAMHSA are developing and delivering TA and training and information both to their grantees and their staff. I think sometimes we think so much about what are we putting out in the field, but we also have to remember to be educating ourselves and making sure that staff and project officers have the latest information as well. And the VA is increasing their PrEP services through their VA facilities as well. In our Community Action Plan framework, we talk about recommended actions being to fully implement routine screening. This is clearly a way to be able to identify those who might be offered PrEP and also to diagnose and link people to care as well. To address stigma and discrimination, we have a number of our regulatory agencies, DOJ, the HHS Office of Civil Rights, the EEOC, and HUD are looking into complaints of HIV discrimination in healthcare settings, in employment, and in housing. And the Office of HIV, AIDS, and Infectious Disease Policy at HHS, or OHADIP, will provide training on stigma to faith-based organizations. And CDC is continuing to support community mobilization and their social marketing campaigns that address both stigma and discrimination. And one of the example actions from the Community Action Framework is looking to reduce stigma and discrimination in healthcare settings by training employees in culturally appropriate care and complying with civil rights laws. And I would add to that knowing how to refer people to the resources in the federal agencies who can help with these matters as well. I'm also pleased to let you know about some relatively new federal actions that were announced earlier this year for improving outcomes in transgender populations. So HRSA has committed to a new leadership development training program for people living with HIV, and they will specifically reach out to include trans women in that program. OHADIP is doing a review of HHS-supported programs and research for trans people, and they'll make that publicly available. CDC has committed to including either specific scoring criteria or separate FOAs when possible to improve how funding to serve trans communities is awarded. And CDC is also expanding the National HIV Behavioral Surveillance to include transgender populations. So to wrap up in thinking about our updated strategy and our updated indicators and targets and goals, I just wanted to leave you with a few thoughts and a question for y'all to think about. So as a guiding document, our strategy really is a national plan and not just a federal plan. And that's partly our driving behind producing the Community Action Plan framework is to really inspire and help facilitate planning and thinking about how to align activities with the strategy in all sectors. And the goals of our strategy can only be achieved by engagement at national, state, tribal, and local levels across all sectors, the government, public sector, private sector, nonprofits. And it's important that people who work in communities play an active role in implementing the strategy so that we're really working in our communities, in our hometowns, to help achieve these goals. And everyone is needed to help put this strategy into action and end the HIV epidemic. And so my question or challenge to you all is, what are you doing in your practice, in your research, in your communities to address the goals of the National HIV/AIDS Strategy? And if you need some resources, there's the ONAP website at the White House. There's our email address. The great source of multiple resources, which is AIDS.gov. So thank you.
So thanks, Amy. That was tremendous, really just fantastic start to the conference and just so well done. I want to take a moment just to acknowledge and just, you know, give thanks for the leadership Amy has had, but also looking, we see Jeff Crowley here. It's just amazing that this strategy from 2010 has had an enduring effect. And then Grant Colfax, his own app director in the continuum of care, what Douglas Brooks did in updating the strategy along with Amy and just this leadership. And to me, it's amazing when I have an opportunity to talk to frontline providers, folks who are doing DIS work and link coordination and do updates on the strategy. The most gratifying thing is that those, that last slide, those messages about it's a national, not a federal strategy, it really resonates with folks. They see this strategy and they see in the work they're doing day to day the value, and I think it's really incredible to have such a